QST, QST. This is Tom Fry, KF6Q. Net control for the Tech Tuesday Net at 1900 hours local time on the Big Bear Amateur Radio Club repeater. 147.330 megahertz, plus offset of 600 kilohertz, and a PL of 131.8. This net is conducted every Tuesday at 1900 hours, conditions permitting. This repeater solely owned, operated, and maintained by the Big Bear Amateur Radio Club. We wish to thank the BBARC for the use of the repeater for this net. The purpose of this net is to provide and promote technical knowledge, education, information of amateur radio, a gateway to spark interest in various aspects of amateur radio communications. And adding to that, we also do little roundtables and supply information for a lot of information going out there and clear up some of the stuff that's not so good. Before I begin, is there any emergency or priority traffic? Please call KF6Q. No emergencies, and that is good. Hearing none, are there any bulletins or announcements for the net? Please call KF6Q. Alrighty, only announcement I have is if you know somebody who's ready to take the tech test or wants to upgrade, keep in mind the Sunday after Thanksgiving, yes, we will be down there at the fire station last Sunday of the month at 1 o'clock, ready and able to do ham testing. We do have some people coming in, but if you are ready, just give me an email at kf6q@arrl.net, or walk-ins are allowed. That's at 1 o'clock, Big Bear Lake Fire Station. All right, topic for the evening. We're going to continue on a little bit of discussion about Yagis. Got a couple people out there working on some homemade ones. Try to steer them in the right direction and, you know, move a little bit forward. That is our topic. All right, well, and now call the roster of the people we have out there just about every week. Starting with, top of the list, back from Alaska. And he flew all the way in, and boy, is his arms tired. WB6CLZ, Mike.
Hey, good evening, Tom, and everyone on the net. It's great to be back here in the lower 48. I got my brother-in-law here in the shack, and he's listening along and kind of interested in our topic tonight. Okay, well, 7-3 to everybody, and we're standing by here.
Okay, no 73s. Just hang out there. Don't go away. How about WB6CIN? Is she handy?
This is WB6CIN, and I'm standing by, too.
All right, guys, go ahead and sit down. Otherwise, your legs will get tired. Hey, yes, 500 comedians out of work, and you guys have to put up with this. KA6CIA, George from Lucerne Valley.
Good evening, Tom. And Annette, I'll be listening. KA6CIA.
Hey, George, glad to have you out there. See if we have KE6QI Nancy and KE6RJ. Harry.
Here's KE6QI, and welcome.
Welcome back to Mike and Nancy. All right, I don't know what happened to your audio there. The last Nancy went to whisper quiet. Anyway, but got you both checked in here. Glad to have you with us. Let's see, do we have KI6SKN out there? Hey, nothing heard there. How about KJ68ZS Mike from Plonskin? Nothing there. How about KJ6FIL Mike from Redlands?
Good evening, Tom and the group. KJ6FIL. Down here in Redlands, for sure.
Okay, Mike, weather's been great up here. Hope it's been good for you down there, too. So, all right, KJ6KDL Jim and KJ6KDK.
Hey, this is KD6KDK here.
And KDL.
All right, guys, glad to have you on here tonight. How about W6GZI, Frank? Okay, nothing heard. How about KI6IQ8, Kelly?
Good evening, Tom and the net. KI6IQA.
Hey, Kelly, glad to have you out there. Appreciate that. K6GVL, Ron from Green Valley.
Good evening, Tom and the net. This is Ron, K6GVL.
Hey, Ron, glad to have you out there. Quick call to Harold. Don't know if he's out there. 86PL, Harold from Riverside. And nothing heard. Hope he's okay. How about N6BOP, Ann? Are you out there from Pomona? And nothing heard. How about K6LCS, Clint, Harupa Valley?
Good evening, Tom and Annette, K6LCS, with some AMSAT news this evening, a very short report.
Okay, Clint, glad to have that report from you this evening, and we've missed you the last couple of weeks, but we know you've been really busy out there with a lot of the work you've done, so glad to have you with us this evening. Appreciate that. Let's see here. We got W6JLM, Judith from Sugarwolf, and W6KMM, Ken.
Good evening, Tom, and everyone on the net. This is W6KMM.
All right, Ken, and we know Judith is hanging out there somewhere. All right, let's see. Moving on down, K6YNW, Chris. Yeah, hasn't heard. He might join us later. How about W6POO? And I haven't heard. How about KD6LAN, Bill?
Yeah, good evening, all. KD6LAN. I hope you guys are ready for tonight.
Bill, we're so ready, they call us ever ready. Okay. Well, that one's old. Ooh. How about AE6CK, Victor?
Yeah, good evening, Tom and Renette. Victor, Santa Fe Springs.
All right, Victor. Hope the weather's down there good for you, too. How about KA6ROD?
Good evening, everyone. KA6ROD.
All right, Rod, glad to have you out there. Let's see, we have Christy from Apple Valley, KB6LTY.
Good evening, Tom and Annette, KB6LTY.
Hey, Christy, glad to have you out there. How about AE6TV, Hans? And nothing heard. And let's see, I think we're getting down here to the last of the list, pretty much. Anybody else out there want to check in as a guest this evening, just come back to KF6Q. All right. Anyway, we know we have a lot of listeners out there. Not a problem. Anybody can join in anytime. Mike, WB6CLZ, the traveling traveler, wanderer there from Alaska, back into the continental U.S. of A. So, you have a DX report and some information about Alaska. Not too good, though, I hear.
Yeah, well, Tom, I have a little advice here, but well, first let me go through the sunspots. We'll give the good news first. Okay, well, we've got Space Weather is currently reporting a sunspot number of 176, which is pretty darn good, and the solar flux index is sitting at 161 solar flux units. So things are good. Things are great. 10 meters has been consistently open with some 6 meters. Openings here and there, none of which I have caught, and so things are good. I mean, this is the type of stuff, guys, that anybody that has been licensed in the past 6 or 7 years has never seen any of this kind of DX. So get out there, enjoy it. It's going to go away in 3 or 4 years. So enjoy the heck of it while it's here. Heck out of it while it's here. I was listening to Germany this morning. Didn't work him, but listening to him. All kinds of stuff's coming in. So even a tech license has 10 meters, and then, you know, get out there and enjoy it. Enjoy it while it's there. Okay, I'm going to reset for a second. Anyway, well, if anybody goes on a mini-D expedition, make sure that they are not in a hotel room on the sixth floor with steel studs and with aluminum or metal window frames. It does not work. West-facing window out into the Gassanot Channel in Juneau. I heard a couple of JAs, I heard a 7, and I heard a 0, and that's on 10 meters. I didn't hear much anything else on any of the other bands. Inadequate antenna, as you normally would have operating portable. Basically, I had an ATX multiband vertical on a tripod with a like a tape measure for my counterpoise. Worked very well up in Big Bear. I was working Poland, South America, all around with excellent results. But in a motel room, it doesn't work. And we couldn't go outside. It was snowing. It was icy. It was nasty weather most of the time for radio operations. So that's my story as to my mini-D expedition. Next time I will have a balcony, and we'll make it work one time, one way or another. A little announcement tonight. We have in our midst tonight, very exciting, the poster boy for Straight Key Night. Rod, KA6ROD, if you go to page 90 of the December QS T, you will see Rod there, and he's telling you to get on your old vintage CW keys. Talks about him having his one he had in his childhood, which I have my J38 that I had in my childhood also. So, Rod, maybe Tom will let you say a couple things. That's kind of cool. It's nice to see one of our own BBARC members' picture in QSD. That's about all I got, guys. And back to you, Tom. KF6Q, Tech Tuesday. This is WB6CLZ.
All right, Mike, thanks for all that information. Yeah, did not know that, and by golly, wish I did get my issue. It's down there in the mailbox, P.O. box, so. This is KF6Q, Tech Tuesday, on the Big Bear Amateur Radio Club repeater. Well, Rod, glad to hear that. Would you like to speak into the microphone and speak to the folks at home?
Well, thank you for telling me about that. Now I have a excuse to go get the mail tomorrow. I did not know I was in there, and I probably sent that, whatever it is, article or whatever, in 6 months ago, so completely forgot. Now I'll go look tomorrow. Thank you, KA6ROD.
Yeah, I know if, the way the lead time is on that, and the lead time on their printing their magazines, like any magazine, it's kind of like, now what did I say? Well, good deal there, Rod. Yeah, definitely got to see that. Maybe next week we can go over some of that. Appreciate that information. Anything you would share with us, that's great. That's fantastic. Well, anyway, also we have, next in line, is our ham satellite report from Quint, K6LCS from Harupa Valley. Quint, go ahead.
K6LCS, man, oh, man, 1 o'clock in the afternoon our time on Sunday. In the sky, all at the same time, Arisat, the International Space Station, to hear some packets, AO-27 and SO-50, all four in the sky, all workable, all at the same time. It was like nirvana for an FM satellite person. If you have not listened to Arisat 1 and those pre-recorded kids' voices coming down on 145.95, when it's in sunlight, go out and do it. It's just exciting to hear, and it's only going to be with us for a few more weeks. I expect it to burn up upon re-entry in about probably second, maybe middle of January. And what else we got going on? AO-27, although the site is down for its schedule, it is working on south to north passes over the West Coast. Break for a sec. use CelesTrak for your KEPS, for your Keplerian data, or AMSAT. And if it's a south to north pass in the afternoon, it'll be on and working for you. And it's 7-minute cycles. Now, AO51, with its deteriorating batteries, starts the eclipses, the times when it is in shade, are increasing here in the winter. Not sure if it's going to survive this winter and into next year or not. So if you've been putting off working AO51, get on it. It's a simple bird, VHF, UHF, technician license is all that's needed. But boy, get to work it. It's going away. We think it's going to go away and not survive these long eclipse periods. And if you're into really low power stuff, a bunch of CubeSats, little tiny CubeSats, 3 by 3 inches, 4 by 4 inches cubes, have been launched recently. There's about 7 or 8 of them in the sky, mostly just with telemetry, none with crossband repeaters on them, but the telemetry and data coming down, all monitorable and all now in your normal sources for Keplerian data, either AMSAT, CelesTrak, or SpaceTrak. That's really about all I've got, but please go out and work ArisSat-1 and go out and work AO51 before they are gone. Thank you, Tech Tuesday, Tom, K6LCS.
Hey, Clint, thanks for that. And what's your website for anybody who wants more information on that and a lot of information you have there on working the satellites? What's the website?
It's worksat.com. Work, W-O-R-K, then there's a hyphen, sat, S-A-T, .com. Or you can always look me up at K6LCS.com, Kilo 6 Lima Charlie Sierra .com. Tom, thanks for that. I appreciate it.
Not a problem. I do have one question for you. I actually had it last week and didn't hear you on there last week. The ISS, I'm looking at some stuff with AMSAT, and I think I was on your site too. Does the ISS also have a onboard cross repeater that we could work just like we work like AO51 and AO27?
The Kenwood TMD-700 is onboard, but it has not been turned on in crossband repeat mode in almost 2 years. So right now we had 3 ARIS contacts, schools to the International Space Station this week. We're now at almost 670 of those schools to the ISS projects. And let's see, there'll only be one ham on board here. The new crew is going, which was just launched yesterday from Russia. So there's only going to be one ham on board for the next few months. So just don't look for the crossband repeater on the TMD-700 to be reset, reprogrammed, and put back on for us. So normally you can hear a packet, and if there's a West Coast school contact, you can always monitor those. And look at the NASA.gov website for the astronaut. Well, there's only, again, one ham on board, but look for his free time and see if any of those passes will be over you during astronaut free time.
Before you go, one more question. So with only one ham on board for the next, I think you said 3 or 4 months or whatever, and such a huge backlog of, I know, schools and kids and whatever to work the ISS, so is that actually pushing some of these new, unless somebody cancels, basically out into, 2014 almost?
No, it's better than it was a couple of years ago. Just last summer, we accepted applications for the first 6 months of 2012, and those 5 U.S. sites were already chosen. And one of mine right here at FlaBob Airport is an alternate, so if someone drops out, we're doing it from FlaBob. So there isn't a 2 or 3 year gap like there used to be or a waiting period. The next application time will probably be in February for the middle of the year next year. So it's not that 2 or 3 year wait that we had previously in the program.
Okay, well, thanks for that information. And anybody out there listening in, if you want to be a part of that, it's really cool. good way to get kids interested in ham radio at a very, you know, like I say, at a very young age, which is the best age, working a ham on a ham radio down here, working a ham on the International Space Station. It's a pretty fantastic program. Quint, appreciate all that information. Anybody else interested in that, of course, it is quite a lead time out there, or any of the dates, get in touch with Quint at his website. He's got all the information right there. All right, this is KF6Q on Tech Tuesday. Every Tuesday we can, conditions permitting. That means if there are emergency weather conditions or situations out there, we generally leave the repeater clear. So, all right, well, this evening we're going to carry on a little bit about Yagis. Let me just reset here real quick, catch my breath. And, yes, a Yagi, you can go out and buy one. A lot of good ones out there in the market. Not a problem with that. And plunk down your cash, hook it up, and you're ready to go. A lot of what we talk about here on Tech Tuesday is do-it-yourself stuff, what to use, how to use it, things that are available that are budget-minded, but still you want to get professional results. So anyway, let's see. I'm going to, real quick, Mike, if you're still out there, CLZ, you've got a Yagi or two. And I think you got those at yard sales, I think. How are they working for you? And that's just, I don't think I bought the last one off you, did I?
Yeah, Tom, you did. You got the last decent one I had. No, all I have right now is a four-element Cushcraft that I did pick up at HRO, and gosh, I think it was 60, 70, 80 bucks. I'm not really even sure. Four element Cushcraft, and we use it on 2 meter sidebands.
Okay, Roger that. Let's clear this up just real quick here. Anybody out there listening, 2 meter sideband. There's a specific group of frequencies on the low end of our 2 meter spectrum that's pretty much set aside for single sideband. Then the upper part is usually FM. That's what we are. We're on FM with repeaters and, you know, HTs and all that good stuff. Now, if you buy an antenna like you have there, Mike, so I'm going to assume, was that tuned for the single sideband portion, or is it pretty much just for the whole band, or do you know?
I haven't put the analyzer on it in so long, I can't remember, but I know it's pretty broad, but I think it's just tuned for basically like 144 to 144.5. It's you know, somewhat narrow. It works on FM, but it's really not tuned for FM, and I've got it horizontally polarized, and, you know, usually all of our FM stuff is vertically polarized.
Comment. Got a comment out there? Yes, go ahead. And what's your call?
This is WA6FQF Bob here, and I just finished building two 2 meter antennas that I copied from two Cushcraft 13 element 2 meter antennas. And that particular antenna, in the instructions, they give a couple of measurements for the driven element to optimize it for the bottom of the band, the middle of the band, or the repeater FM upper end of the band as part of their package from Cushcraft. Over.
Okay, well, that's good information, because basically the driven element itself, as we all know, is essentially the one that's going to tune that thing for the primary frequency. You're going to be good up and down from that a little bit. I think when we did some J-poles, they were actually pretty wide band. That's the dipole. J-pole is a dipole. The driven element on a Yagi is a dipole. Your 80-meter wire across the sky, that's a dipole. It's basically the dipole, meaning that it's has two field polarities there. Essentially, you've got it's a half wave. A half wave of whatever the wavelength is. So, without getting too technical there. Anyway, let's see, where were we before we had that information? Oh, yeah, Mike, with your antenna, works pretty good. Now, one thing we got to remember here, and this is if you're going to set up your Yagi, and we're doing this as Yagi 101 for a lot of you out there. Some of you out there well tuned in to a lot further along the line than that. Yagi's 101. Number one, horizontal versus vertical. There is a 100-to-1 loss if the signal you're trying to receive is vertical and you are horizontal. That may not matter if you're only 5 miles away from the repeater. Probably wouldn't, but if you get some distance out there, 100th, in other words, out of 100 parts of that signal, you're going to receive one out of that dollar bill. You're going to get one penny. And, Mike, that's pretty important. Have you used that Chris Craft also to get in up here from Placentia?
I wish I had it switched. I did for a long time have it on a coaxial switch so I could switch one to the other. In actuality, yes, I have, but the little Radio Shack disc cone that I have at the top of my tower works 100% better than that horizontally polarized four-element Yagi. So, yeah, what you said is exactly true, and I've proven it out many times.
Well, anyway, so we just want to everybody or anybody and everybody out there, if you're getting, you're going to set one up and you say, well, see, does it really matter? Well, yes, it does. If you're on the lower end of the 2 meters and you're going to be running the single sideband modulation, horizontal is the way you want to go. Get that thing looking like a TV antenna on the flat. Otherwise, keep it vertical for all the FM stuff up here, the repeaters and just about everything else. So. All righty, let's see, I think we're going to go over to Bill. Bill, just real quick, I know you're working on a Yagi, you're collecting parts, and I know that you're working on the match. We're going to talk about the match tonight and why it's important, what that is, and what it's all about. Bill, you're building a gamma match from instructions you got off the Internet. And pretty simple thing there, was it? Use a piece of coax and some tubing, or how is that configured there?
I'm building a 7-element. Actually, the antenna is done. What I'm working on now is the gamma match, or the gasma match, because it's a gas, I'll tell you. And I do have a couple of questions that I wanted to ask about that.
Okay, Roger that. And, you know, one, there's just real quick, anybody out there listening, matches, actually, what is a match? Well, that's exactly how you're going to feed your feed line or how you're attaching your feed line to the antenna. And I'm going to literally say this for all of you out there, if you do any research on the Internet, I have seen, and yes, this will work, I've seen HF dipole wire antennas, I have seen instructions for building Yagis, and essentially a Yagi is, what is a Yagi? Well, you got one reflector, just one bar in the back. The bar in the middle is the one you're going to hook your wires to, and then you've got any one or more elements in front called directors. Literally hooked the coax, right, straight coax, braided shield went to one element, center connector went to the other, and that was it. And this was blessed by somebody's website, referred to by a great, pretty big web collection of ham stuff out there. I'm not going to mention the site. And yes, that'll work. It will work. Like we always said, any antenna will work. Is that the best? Absolutely not. Not at all. Let me reset. But it will work. So anyway, the way the wire is attached to the antenna, the gamma match is one. We have gamma, beta, T match, delta match, and... You know, that's the beta is also called a hairpin. They're all different. And will they all work? Yes, they will. Are some better than others? I have different opinions of that, and a lot of other people do too. I think the beta match is the best because it's got a lot of tuning abilities. But so does the gamma match. Well, Bill, go ahead with your questions. Throw your questions out there. This is KF6Q Tech Tuesday. Hand it over to KD6LEN. Go ahead with the questions.
Okay, it's actually a, I guess, two or three part question, and I'll try to give it all at the same time. I'm looking at different schematics for different antennas, and each schematic gives me a different length of it for the gamma match. It gives me a different distance from the drive element to the gamma match. Question is, can the distance between the drive element and the gamma match be rectified or cleared up, if you want to call it that, by tuning the gamma match, or can the gamma match length be adjusted by the distance between the drive element and the match, or the gamma match shielding? I'll reset. Yeah, okay, coming back, this is all dependent on a 7 element with 3/8 tubing on a 1-inch boom.
Okay, are you ready for your answer?
I am waiting with wormy breath. I mean, bated breath.
Well, I know you were at our J-poll thing we did last year, and I think that we proved a point there with multiple J-polls that people brought in on our workshop, that even right there, the J on the J-poll, okay, the distance that was from the main element, exactly where the tap was, those were adjustable, and they could actually change. The diameter of the pipe used for the J-pole could be different. But essentially, with your gamma match, here's the deal. The diameter of the gamma match material, the core, I think you're using a piece of, like RG58 or 9913 coax. I'm assuming they had you strip off the plastic, strip off the shield. You're probably going to slip this inside a little piece of tubing. This is a guess, but I think I've seen this done before. What you've got here is the distance between that thing and your driven element. It is important. But you'll also notice that at the end of the gamma match, there's a slider bar. It actually looks like something that's holding it in place. But actually, that's adjustable, and that's adjustable for a reason. As that moves away or closer to the boom, you're actually tuning your match a little bit. The gamma match is a combination inductor and a capacitor all rolled into one with the different parts of that. It resembles like part of a transmission line. We're not going to get into too much detail here because it's going to confuse everybody out there, probably even me. So you're going to find different dimensions. Just let me reset to make sure I don't time out here. You're going to have different dimensions there, and they'll all work. If you use exactly the same material per that one detail and then those dimensions are based on that material. The size, the diameter of the tubing is important. The material inside is important. And that's why that distance has been set up probably by testing and construction practices and a little bit of math at the beginning. But anyway, so you're going to find a lot of variety out there. They will all work, all of them, as long as you follow the instructions for each one all the way throughout. Now, don't substitute material in one at that point. This is very important. Does that help you any more there, Bill?
Yeah, kind of, sort of, almost, maybe. I think I've talked to you about what I'm doing here. I'm using material from one blueprint,
so to speak, and measurements from another. But it's my understanding that I can tune this thing, hopefully anyway, that I can tune this thing to make it work with the gamma match. If I can get a one-to-one or close to a one-to-one match with a dB gain, I'll be happy, especially from what I'm running.
Yeah, you've got actually the gamma match is going to allow you to tune it. There's two things here that are, well, there's many things, but actually probably the most important thing you have to follow. If you're following instructions, anybody out there on building a Yagi from any, off the internet or a set of plans you got or something that you bought and shows other plans, the primary concern is the driven element, the one where the coax or feed's going to go to. The directors in the front, yeah, you want to keep them somewhere between, I mean, we're on on VHF stuff. You want to, I'm going to say quarter-inch rod or quarter-inch tubing, maybe 3/8 tubing max. I guess you could go up to half. It'd be a waste of money. But anyway, something like that is not going to be as critical as the driven element. The driven element itself, the diameter of the tubing or whatever you're using and the length of it, are probably the most critical two things that you're going to find. If the diameter changes, the length has to change too. The fatter it gets, the shorter it has to be. Just it's all about physics and electromagnetism and stuff beyond the topics tonight. We will get into it if somebody wants to talk about it, but not tonight. But anyway, so you want to stick, like if you chose half-inch or 3/8 tubing, use that size tubing, because if you cut it to the length and you've used a different diameter of tubing, it's going to throw that off. Let me reset. So that's pretty critical. The reflector in the back, not as critical. The distance from the reflector, and you got to watch some of these things too. Make sure that when they give you dimensions, are those spaced between them or are they center-to-center dimensions? I would say that a lot of those might start from the reflector, and you have to be very careful because that'll change a lot of where your spacing is. If it's, say, 3/8 tubing and, say, it's 10 inches to the next element, well, is that 10 inches from center of the other one to the center of this, or is that the space between them? Read your instructions very carefully. Let me reset. If your spacing is wrong, the antenna will still work. It's going to change the way the antenna operates. It's going to change the bandwidth, and it's going to change the gain. Chances are it'll probably still work at VHF frequencies. If you get up into 1.2 gigahertz, you will never get away with that. It has to be exact. But at 2 meters, not a problem. So like I said, it's fairly easy. It may seem difficult at first, but there's a lot of leeway there with building your own 2-meter Yagi. But there's a couple things to watch. Bill, is there any other questions, or if I confused you totally there, or you know, what do you, you know, does this help clear things up for you?
Oh, not a problem. clear as mud, as usual. But no, it the one diagram I'm looking at the one diagram I'm looking at just gives me the one diagram I'm looking at just gives me dimensions, but it doesn't say whether it's center to center or what. The other diagram I'm looking at says center to center, but that's not the one I'm following. I'm sorry. again, it's clear as mud. That is one of my questions. Can this thing be, I'm going to say, brought into whatever, can it be brought in to make it work by using the gamma match?
Yeah, KF6Q here with the Tech Tuesday Net. Well, real quick, because we do have a couple other things we want to move on to also. Essentially, none of us currently that I know of have a antenna testing range set up out there in the desert. So essentially, whatever the gain is what it is. It could say, well, this is supposed to be 9 dB gain. That's great. You're never going to know whether that is or not. You're really not. If it is, it is. Whatever it is what it's going to be. Tech, you know, I mean, this is we're splitting hairs here. Whatever it's going to end up, the closer it is to the workable dimensions and the math and all that, yeah, it's going to approach what the design thing is if it was supposed to be 9 dB. You're not going to know that. You're going to say, hey, this thing works great. And it will work great. And even if it's 8 dB gain or 7 dB gain, you're not going to know. You're going to say, hey, this thing works great. And that's that. The main thing is we want to make sure you get most of the signal to the radio and the radio, most of the signal out. And that's by doing the match, making sure that the 50 ohms from the radio, the 50 ohm impedance coming down the transmission line is going to match up to the antenna. Because dipoles are 50 ohms. Oh, wait a minute. No, dipoles are 75 or 72 ohms. No, wait a minute. Well, what are they? Let me reset. And if you have a dipole it's one of the driven element of a Yagi, it should be 50 ohms, right? Well, or is it 72 ohms? Or wait a minute, why is it 16 ohms? And this is what we're gonna brief over this a little bit tonight. Trust me, it's an involved topic, but it's very, very important because at 16 ohms, you're going to have a 3-to-1 SWR. You're not getting any signal out, so that's important. But anyway, Bill, basically, yes, you can tune it. The main thing that gamma match is going to do is match your 50 ohm impedance to the impedance of the antenna. The length of the driven element is going to control what frequency it's tuned for. So watch that length, real critical. The rest of them, they could be off a little bit. I don't recommend making them off. And I would say most dimensions are probably going to be center to center. But the gamma match is going to basically tune your feed line to the antenna. And that's what, you know, and since it's tunable, if you're a little bit off, then we can fix that with a meter. Does that help you any there?
Well, yeah, everything helps, but it's all relevant. So, okay, yeah, no, I do appreciate all the help I can get. As you know, I'm a DOS dummy. Oh, wait a minute, that's computers, isn't it? So, okay, I'll give it back to Net Control, KD6LAN.
And Bill, I'm not picking on you, but I know that's probably one of the critical things right there. With homemade Yagis is the match, and that's the part that people probably don't pay attention to. They pay really attention to that seventh director out front there, which probably does so little, even though it adds gain. So does number six out there. You know, it all adds up. But actually, the spacing, the size can be off a little bit. You know, and I say that, you know, as a shot from the hip. Basically, it could be good and still work fine, even though you're not that critical, you know, where you haven't paid attention to the dimensions, as long as you're reasonably in the ballpark. You won't get a home run, but you may get to third base. Anyway, Jim Lloyd out there, KJ6KDL, what were you able to find out, or does this help you any? Because I know you had some questions, too.
Yeah, this is my bench learning project. I figured my 2 weeks vacation, which is already a little more than half over, I would play with the metal parts that we talked about that used to be a push-up tent and looked like it would be easily convertible into an antenna, and started working with that with Harry, KE6RJ, and it became quickly apparent that we're doing a, I think it was a 9 dB gain version that was about 97 inches long, that the steel tubing was starting to not take shape the way we were hoping. It was getting heavy and had a lot of mass to it. So I started looking around and I realized I wasn't sure exactly how the wires actually fed to the antenna. And then I found there's more than one way to connect the wires to the driven element, and there are more than one shape to the driven element. And I was getting lost in the mud because some sites said you'll come up with a 28-ohm driven element, and someone said you will get 200 or 300 ohms on your driven element, and I wasn't sure exactly what they were talking about. But I did remember our antenna class last year where we made a half-wave dipole out of an SO239 connector, and we had to push the radials to 45 degrees before we got a 50-ohm impedance at frequency, so I couldn't figure out how we were going to pull this off. One guy had a really cool site. I accidentally closed it about an hour ago, and I haven't found it since, where the guy used RG8 coax, which I could use my LMR400, which is basically a non-mil spec version with supposedly UV plastic, but he used that to push straight through with some PVC tubing to reinforce it and have the cable come out one end, makes it a vertical, by the way, and supposedly would be 50 ohms, and I could not figure this one out. But I did find one website before I get my 3 minutes. Anybody who's on their computer, if you go to creative-science.org.uk/tubeyagi.html, there's a really nice short explanation of how to make a 2-meter Yagi by a guy named Jonathan Hare, G1EXG, and he shows a way to tune your 5-element Yagi with PVC. So pretty interesting, but I think I'm on the way.
You know, and this is one reason why I think my favorite match, well, first off, let's look at two different ways that the driven elements can be handled here. In one type, all the elements are shorted to the boom. They're screwed directly to the boom. And the driven element also is shorted to the boom. You're saying, well, wait a minute, how does that work? Well, technically, with all the elements, the middle, which is screwed to the boom, is a neutral point. It's an electronics type thing. Don't worry about it for now. And if you do the driven element that way, that's fine, but then you are definitely going to be using a gamma match. You have to feed this with a gamma match or a T match, which is actually two gammas back to back, which gives you twice the headaches to try to tune them both at the same time. And you got to make sure they're both identical. So T match is good. Gamma is a little bit easier. With that in mind, that is one type of feed. The other type of feed, the driven element is split in half, electrically isolated from the boom, and each element is isolated from each other. This is a construction item here, because now you have to support it and make sure it's electrically not in contact. Doing that, of course, plexiglass comes into play, or Lexan, or Bakelite, or all these neat little things, you know, to do this, you know, and there's a lot of stuff out there showing how to do it with store-bought stuff. Once these are isolated, yes, you can literally hook the shield to one, center connect to the other. Bad idea, but it will work. Next in line with that is a delta match or a beta, also known as the hairpin match. Let me reset. The advantage of the hairpin match is this. It is extremely simple to build. There is no tubing. There is no coax inside of tubing and the slider bar. Well, there is a slider bar, but basically, you simply have a big U-shaped piece of wire. If you build it properly, shorts directly to the boom, connects to the connectors, you're done. It's that simple. Real simple, and at that point, too, we simply, because it's a balanced antenna now, we need to simply go from unbalanced coax to that. That, too, is very easy to do. with a quarter wave section of coax. So, and all can be right on the boom. So I think the Betamatch essentially is the easiest to build and works just as well. Let me reset. And this is KF6Q with Tech Tuesday Net. The antenna mic that I got from you, a yard sale item, $10, pretty cool, works great. It had a hairpin match. I loved it, it's great. There's all different ways. If you have a folded dipole for your driven element, that's supposed to be 300 ohms. No, wait, no, it's supposed to be 200 ohms. No, wait. It could be 16 times 4. Well, that's 64 ohms. So there's a lot of different things it could be. There's only one thing it's definitely going to be. And the problem is that a lot of these people who build this stuff never put a meter on it. They say, well, it's supposed to be that, but it's not. And let me reset. Which takes us just briefly back to the long wire, wire in the sky dipole antenna. I worked with Harry, KE6RJ, set up a 20 meter antenna at his house. And just like we adjusted the legs of that little, you know, little tiny antenna over at Mike's garage by changing the angle, Harry and I changed the angle of this inverted V. And yes, an inverted V dipole can be 50 ohms. As you spread them out flat, they tend to go to 72 ohms. And the height above ground, of course, is critical. For a 20 meter antenna, we were plenty high. 80 meters, you'll never get that high up, unless you have a huge tower. But yeah, so the angles all change. Things change. They're never, you can't just say, well, a dipole is 50 ohms. You're gonna be right only part of the time. Mike seals it. Real quick, we've left you out of the loop. Anything to add?
No, not really, Tom. I'm just intently listening here, and golly, I'm just following right along. No, nothing to add. Everything sounds like it's copacetic to me. Back to you, Tom. KF6Q, WB6CLZ.
Okay, thanks, Mike. Another thing here, too, and there's an excellent site. This is my secret site. I don't hand this one out to just anybody. Another gentleman, I believe it's an Aussie, or he's a Canadian. He's one of the two. Excellent site. Now, this K7MEM, great site. You want to go there, K7MEM.com. It's got all your answers right there. Or you can keep exploring. I know Jim, I think Jim likes to log up as many sites as he can. I think he's up to about 150 now. But anyway, little pun there, Jim. Basically, there's another thing. When you start stacking antennas, of getting them to match. Rule number one, coax is going to the antennas have to be the same length where they split. But now you've got impedances in parallel. You only get back to 50 ohms. Maybe you want to start out with 16 ohms. It gets very confusing fast. So before we have everybody's head spinning out there, the main thing is this. If you're going to do a really simple antenna and a design, just follow that. There's a lot out there. Go to K7MEM.com. His stuff works. Very simple. It's that simple. Or keep exploring and get more confused. That's your choice. But anyway, Jim, I appreciate all the stuff you're looking into out there, but I think as you have found, sometimes you can get a lot of confusion going there with a lot of conflicting information. But hopefully some of the stuff we've said here tonight has helped. Anything that you could add, Jim?
Yeah, well, when I got confused on K7MEM site, it makes an assumption that you know what you're doing up front, and I don't because I'm a hobbyist and I don't do this that often. It doesn't really explain how you connect the wires to your elements. So I couldn't figure out how to get the signal to it. That's when I started looking and then started going through the ARL book, through chapter 18 and 24 and 25, and I realized there's more than one way to do this. And like you said, one way was to break the element up and get your positive and negative quarter waves to get your half wave, which is basically a dipole. And there's more than one way to do that. But then you have to worry about your impedance and how to get your impedance to match. So That's where I was at there earlier today, looking around. I was trying to figure out, well, exactly how do I interface this? One of them showed a solid bar. One of them actually showed mounting a bar on top of a bar and doing a coax balun. And I finally found a version of that for a 50-meter antenna, but it wasn't quite exactly what I was looking at earlier. But now I've got a site that shows how to connect the wires to the antenna that K7MEM mentions, and now I can see how it's going to work. And for expedience, just need to connect up with one of those neighbors who keeps their meter up here, and I'm on my way.
Comment. Yeah, hold on one second there. Comment. One thing there, Jim, on the K7MEM site, his main site has all the little built-in calculators, and that's all cool. He's got a whole separate area on hooking your feed in, and if you don't explore the menu items on the top, I'm not sure exactly which one. You have to explore his site. He has all the information on the matches, where the antenna goes to. If you're just doing a page one and looking at that and getting confused, you will. You have to go up through the menu bar. You have to go through some of the items up there. I forget which one it was. But he even has a whole separate section just on doing your match. And I do believe he uses the beta match with a quarter wave balun to bring it into balance, and explains a lot of that great construction detail. So I don't think you saw that. Evidently, I think you missed that part. Spend some time there. When you've gone to every single menu item there and you still can't find it, let me know. Anyway, go ahead, comment.
WA6FQF here again. You covered part of what I was going to comment on, and that is various matches lend themselves to off-center feed lines, coaxial. The gamma match, you don't need to worry about so much a balanced line, whereas the beta match, the T match, and folded dipoles, all of those are balanced, and you're going up with an unbalanced coaxial cable, and so then you need a balance to distribute that energy even to both halves of the driven element. Anyway, that was it. Enjoyed the comments very much, Tom. Over.
Yeah, WA6MQF, Bob, it's KF6Q here. That is why generally on those type of feeds, you'll see that they feed one element with center conductor, and then they also will have a quarter wave loop, I'm gonna call it a loop, a quarter wave length of coax, and that's electrical quarter wave, of course, you know, with the with the velocity factor taken into account. That the center conductor on that end, of course, goes to the other driven element. And essentially, that solves the problem right there. And that's pretty typical. You do have to do that, but it's just another little extra piece of the same coax you're using to feed the thing. And, it can be done pretty well. I like the hairpin match because of the fact it's adjustable. And you can play with the length of the driven element and the hairpin match, and you can literally pull that thing right in at 50.